Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are joined once again by Alicia Brenner from the Lorehounds. How are you doing, Alicia?
Hello. Glad to be back in the same seat that I was just sitting in.
20 minutes ago.
When we just recorded.
Or however long.
It's a different day in release land, though.
Yeah. Right. And we've come to the heart of the conversation. And this conversation is, of course, why you guys picked this 5-minute gap for me.
Yes. Yeah. This is the big one of the week.
Yep.
For sure.
So I think, you know, we just pick up right where we left off with the end of yesterday's episode.
Go for it.
We'll just go right into it because I'm sure all of us have a lot to talk about.
Yes.
So where we left off, Paul tells his mother and by proxy his unborn sister, who's fully conscious, that he must continue fighting in the north to protect Jessica and in turn Alia down there in the south. And there's a moment of pause that Jessica has here, and she's doing her little mumbling to herself. Almost, you know, like we talked about yesterday with the interpreting and everything. And Jessica's response is, she says she can tell when you lie. And Paul's immediate response is then, well, tell her that's because our mother keeps spreading dangerous tales. And there's an awkward silence there.
But Jessica does not react to this. Yeah. She's just kind of like looking around, you know, just saying, okay, you know. Yeah, whatever.
Well, she's listening. She's listening to what Alia. Maybe I'm coming to your way of saying it. Alia. She's listening to what her unborn child is saying. And the funniest part of this to me is Paul. Like, it's like beat, waiting. And then he's like, well, "What's she saying now?
What's going on?"
He's trying to be a hard ass, and then he's like, "No, but wait, I can't hear her. Tell me what she's like." He really cares what his fetal little sister, he really cares what she thinks already.
And Jessica's response is, she says you're blinded by love, and she reminds you that you must reserve your hand for the most strategic alliance. She's also wondering why you don't believe in who you are. And like we talked about yesterday, this is very much that, you know, Alia is the religious fanatic of the family. Mm-hmm. She found Jesus. And Jesus is her brother.
Wow.
Well.
It's like the sorry to interrupt. It's like the brother of the new pope. Have you seen those videos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so the new pope's from Chicago. And he has two brothers, and they're just like cool down to earth
people. One of them I think is a teacher and the other one's just like a IT guy or whatever.
But there's been a lot of interviews with the Pope's brothers going around, and this is such a weird thing to think about.
The thing that I thought was funny is like, the day before Conclave we were playing Words with Friends together and Wordle together, like. All right.
Cool. Well, it's funny that he one of the brothers said that he watched Conclave before he went into the Conclave.
Yeah.
Which is totally something a normal person would do, but you're like, okay.
I watched it during, so
It's a very fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. We covered it on the Lorehounds if anyone wants the full breakdown.
I will have to check that out. I would love to see what you guys had to say about it. Because as a born and raised Catholic, it was a very interesting movie to watch.
Well, we had a religious studies scholar, Anthony was one of the guests speaking about it.
That's
so
awesome.
Or co-hosts. Yeah. Yeah. So Alia, I'm going to go back and forth in her name, and I'm sorry to the people at home who are yelling at me about it.
Deal with it.
I'm allowed to talk about the ending of the movie, right? Or no? Or is it a spoiler?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the way that we have always framed this podcast is, I hope that you've watched the movie at least once or twice,
right?
Because if you're watching the movie at the rate that we're talking about it, that's insane.
fair. Okay. This whole conversation here, I guess this is what is echoing in Paul's head at the end of the movie when he, you know, says, I will marry Irulan.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Alia knows. I mean, she's clearly the real strategist, I think, of the group too, along with being the more religious person. She seems to know exactly where things need to go. Now, maybe Jessica knows this as well, but she's just, you know, a little bit more mature and not outwardly saying it. I don't know, but
she's not as direct as
that's a better way of saying
unborn
it.
abomination.
Oh, okay. Well, we will see about that. So Alia says, Paul's blinded by love and, you know, he needs to reserve his hand for the most strategic alliance. And then the second like part of that phrase, she goes, she's also wondering why you don't believe in who you are. That one, that part was said kind of in a more jovial manner. It wasn't as heavy as the first part.
Yeah. It was definitely more of
like a needling kind of thing. Yeah. Not so serious. That one made me think it was, almost Jessica saying that instead of Ollie.
Mm.
I could be very wrong there. I was just like, there's a little bit of a difference between the two tones.
Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, it could be Jessica is, as you said, interpreting. So this is also an issue when you're interpreting for someone. Oh, I can think of some short films. Like there's one short film. I can't remember the name. I'm sorry. But you see someone interpreting for a woman who comes from a very conservative area, and she's trying to say what her husband's been doing to them, and the interpreter is just saying in a completely different tone. And so at the end of the day, she's just sent back home because that's what they got from the interpreter. So if Alia cannot impress her will on her mother, then her mother has a lot of leeway with how she conveys what she's saying.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think it just falls in line with what Jessica wants Paul to understand too. So it's an instance where they're both in agreement with each other. So at that point, Jessica just kind of takes the reins on the delivery rather than word for word from Alia.
Right.
So I don't know. Interesting. We then move on in the conversation, though, to Paul's...
Well, hang on one second.
Yeah.
Alicia, did that set up what you were going to talk about? Or is that something completely different?
Well, I was just going to ask if you thought that Alia was right about Paul not believing in himself. Or what does that mean?
Yeah, I think she's absolutely right now. Because it kind of goes back to what I said at the end of yesterday's episode. He has had a shift in his demeanor, and in believing that he is, you know, their Messiah. He clearly just, he told Chani that he's not the Messiah. I don't think he wants it. I truly think he's being earnest when he says, I don't want it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want
not
it.
Like that, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Not like that. So, yeah, I think she is correct there. He comes back around to it eventually. I think something that happens in future minutes, an old friend getting introduced back into the picture, kicks him in the other direction and kind of gets him, course corrects him, I guess would be a good way of saying it. In this moment, yeah, I think she is right.
Okay.
John, opinions?
I mean... I think we're in the same understanding here. Not to cop out on anything that I would have to contribute, but I think Gurney's introduction, spoilers, or reintroduction is, and then the things that Gurney feeds Paul, you know, with the sweet nothings that he whispers to Paul or whatever, really re-radicalizes Paul towards vengeance for more than just getting to the emperor, but like true vengeance for his family and his father.
Yeah. You know, if the opportunity it presented itself for Paul to just live a, you know, quote unquote normal Fremen life, as he is right now, I think he would take it. You know, as he is in this moment.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's been his entire life. He's been honed as a weapon of every, like all of the different disciplines combined. So could he ever be someone who just like was one of the people. I don't know. He was raised to not be that.
Yeah. True. I don't know. We'll never know.
I don't know. Because we'll never early, know. Early on in part one, like in the conversation between Paul and Leto in the graveyard, Paul's still like, I don't want any of this. But then just a few minutes ago when we wrapped up with David, Father, I've found my way. His way seemingly being, you know, out in the desert with the Fremen living his, you know, Fedaiken life or whatever. And like, that seems to be what Paul wants.
Yeah.
He went to study abroad and went native.
It's kind of what I was about to get. It was like, we also have to keep in mind, we're talking about a 15-year-old here.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, you point in the direct, you know, send him in that direction. And it's like, this is my life. This is everything for me now.
You point a 15, 16-year-old man in the direction of a pretty girl that shows him any attention whatsoever. He's done.
I do think they've been aged up a bit for the movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
I don't think he's the 15, 16, you know, in the books, but he's definitely.
They also don't explicitly say.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's the whole weird thing with the movie not having a time jump. So, like, what age is Paul? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, he's still clearly very young, but. I wouldn't say he's, you know, the 15, 16. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's got to be a time jump for part three for Anna Taylor-Joy.
It's going to be interesting to see. We talked about this on some unreleased episodes as of the time of this recording, okay. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, how they manage that time jump and everything.
Yeah, because Timothée Chalamet and Anya Taylor-Joy are, like, relative. They're about the same age.
I think. Am I wrong? I think she's older than he is.
Does the spice slow aging?
fair.
Yeah.
That's gonna be interesting to see how they handle that.
I trust Denis to handle it in a decent way. I don't know if it's gonna be the way that you or I want them to handle it, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's like.
Principal photography starts, I think, this month. So
nice. Wow. Yeah, I don't even know where to start to speculate on that, like how they're going to handle it.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll get there.
We'll
get there in 4 years when we mm-hmm. get, you know, minute by minute, we'll get there.
Oh God.
So Alia / Jessica, I just have AJ in my notes.
AJ.
Yeah, AJ. Yeah,
nice. Well, I guess we're at PB&J again. Sorry, to catch you up. So PB&J is Paul Baby Jessica.
Okay.
And then we have a name for when Paul and Shawnee are together, which is Chaw.
And then, God.
Yeah. So we come up with these.
I do not names. PB&J. I'm with you. Chaw. Yeah. No.
I had to convince John a little bit.
It should be Chusel.
I wasn't
Chusel. Yeah, we can go with Chusel.
Chusel. He is Usel now. So
yeah, no, Chusel. I like that.
All right. Chusel.
So, Paul says that he knows that he matters to these people, and that he believes he's making a difference in the world. And he adds that we're nearly at the gates of the city. And I agree with him on a statement when he says he's making a difference in the world. It's not a good one, but he is making a difference. He's making an effect on the world here. And I guess that last line, he says, we're nearly at the gates of the city, is in reference to, you know, they're continuing to raid and I guess, like, take back territory, trying to reach.
Well, it's as Stilgar asked, well, what would you do?
We're going north, yes.
I would go north. Then I will go north. Or as Paul returned in asking Stilgar, what would you do? I would go north. Then I will go north with you.
Right.
So.
This is why, see, man, you have more space in your head for this stuff. More ability to remember these things than I do. And I appreciate that.
Well, you're learning how to fly planes. So.
It's true. There's a lot of weather talk in here right now. Yeah.
Oh, do you watch the rehearsal? Sorry, just an aside.
I know what you're talking. I have not seen it, but I know exactly what you're talking about, and I find it hilarious. I love Nathan Fielder.
Oh, man, you've got to watch it and talk to John and I about it.
Okay.
The other John.
yeah. Yeah,
it's been a crazy, anyone who doesn't know, Nathan Field is show on HBO. It's called The Rehearsal. It's like reality. And it's this season is about airline safety, and it's wild.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was...
Nathan Fielder can get me to watch any show just with that weird face that he does. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean...
Well, to bring it into reality, when I was... I took my first like actual in the plane flight yesterday. And he's kind of right. Like me and the guy that were flying, like we talked a little bit while we were up there. Mm. But while we were flying, other than just like directions and like, directives, there wasn't a lot of chit chat and getting to know each other. So well, he's right.
Maybe if you had a giant puppet mama to relive the life of Sully Sullenberger.
That's true. So, all right. Well, back to Doom. Yeah, that's where my brain is at. Sorry. So they're going north. They are making their way north, and they are almost to the city.
And Jessica's response is, that's not what she means.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's just like, yeah, I know what Alia means. not that directly, but that was definitely the tone from that conversation was,
sure.
Yeah, I fucking know. But I don't want to agree with her.
Yeah.
Jessica kind of gaslights Paul a little bit and is like, well, don't you think that I feel the weight of the prophecy too?
And important to note, I think this is Jessica, not Alia, talking. Yeah. This is again Jessica now not interpreting. This is mm-hmm. actually her, because she like turns to look at him,
mm-hmm.
And like there's differences of facial expressions and everything here.
Yeah, I agree. But okay, so she says, "Do you not think you don't think I feel it also?" And he says, "It's not a prophecy." But my thinking about this is, it's more complex than it is or isn't a prophecy, because regardless of whether there's Bene Gesserit machinations behind it, it is something that was foretold and is coming true.
Yeah. So, yes, it is quite literally a prophecy, because it was something that was prophesized, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the Fremen culture as a prophecy, but I think Paul just views it as a lie that his mom's organization told these people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the distinction that he's trying to make.
But yet it is happening, as I said.
Yeah. 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 It's a good lie, but in his mind, it's still a lie.
I wouldn't say it's a good lie. It's been an effective lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's vague enough to where you can fit a lot of different circumstance and, you know, template match to it.
Yeah. And Paul even, you know, calls this out and calls out the Bene Gesserit as a whole and just says, you know, what your people did to this planet or to this world is heartbreaking. So it's very just like, even though like you weren't the one to start this, you're not helping to make it better.
Hmm.
What you're doing is heartbreaking, and this is really fucked up.
I mean, yeah.
Kind of, I don't know. We talked a little bit about how Paul has, you know, shifted his mindset since, you know, he's been out in the desert with the Fedaiken and everything. Kind of seems a little white savior to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
But I also think this story, it is something that is part of their story now, because it's been part of their culture for a long time. And I think it's also like, if we look at the language they speak, the Chakopsa, now they haven't, I don't think they've defined it as such in the movies, but in the books, we know this is based on a real, at least a rumor of like a secret hunting language from the Caucasian mountains in our real world, you know, mm-hmm. And, Frank Herbert loved to do that, take stuff from like our ancient or older history and like say that propagated through the galaxy thousands of years from now. So Chakopsa is something, obviously, we see the Fremen speaking it, the Bene Gesserit speak it, and it's also an old like war language of the Atreides clan of Paul's people. Mm. So, and this whole missionera protectiva thing, is sort of in a similar way, something that has decimated through the galaxy, but that doesn't mean that those who have incorporated the language or the prophecies or whatever, that's they've made it their own, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for better or for worse, it is a part of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, initially intended for the Bene Gesserit to be able to ingratiate themselves, and in a bad way. I think ingratiate has like a positive connotation, but just to, you know, like inject themselves into a culture and just manipulate them if they need to. So that was the point of all of those prophecies that they spread, or, you know, just the religious influence that the organization, would exert onto some like culture.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it, you know, started from a place of
control.
Yeah, control. Yeah.
Manipulation.
Or just, you know, bad intentions, I think is kind of what I was just, whether it started from a place of bad intentions or not, it is part of it. It was like a foundational part of their culture at this point. So, and he has to understand that. He has to recognize that.
Yeah. And if like the Bene Gesserit hadn't implanted this specific story, you know, humans in general, we seek meaning. And that often means mm-hmm. that we build religions around where we see meaning, you know, and to make sense of everything to us. So, and they point out in the film, the harsher the place, sometimes maybe more the more extreme the ideas, because you have to be extreme to survive. So if it had not been this specific story implanted, would their culture have been significantly different, or would they have found another thing to build their religion around? Because their culture is shaped by the planet, not by the Bene Gesserit story. It's just mm-hmm. an aspect of it. But they're still spice eaters who dress a certain way because of the climate they're in, who live a certain way because they have to.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the stillsuit doesn't exist because of a Bene Gesserit lie.
Right.
So, no, I mean, I think it's safe to say that something would have popped up. I just think the Bene Gesserit were smart enough to get there first and realize that there was no, like, pre-existing religious dominance, and they just kind of snuck in and did missionary productiva things.
Or it was a religion that they could easily influence, no matter how expansive it was when they started.
Yeah.
This is something that they could influence.
Hmm. Yeah, they said they took to it more than maybe some other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Fremen didn't always have harsh lives. I mean, I think if you go back in the history, like they lived on planets that were like paradise planets
mm-hmm.
Throughout their history. So it was that the ups and downs is what really shaped their religions.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that they didn't always have harsh lives, because I mean the whole thing with the Zensuni migration was that it was constant, but there mm-hmm. were certainly like some moments.
Yeah, periods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of levity compared to Arrakis being the shithole that it
is. I mean, but they still have periods of levity. They have, you know,
mm-hmm.
they have their siege hangouts and their tent naming ceremonies and
their parties. Spice orgies.
In the middle of this, Paul says they deserve to be led by one of their own. Do you think Paul ever qualifies or ever can qualify as one of their own?
I think that depends on who you ask. So I think Stilgar would say yes to that. I think Chani would say no.
Yeah.
I think, I mean,
in movie characters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. with what we just did last week with the writing of Shai Hulud, I think was like the last like cultural touchstone. Mm-hmm. Because Paul has, you know, killed a man with a Kris knife.
Mm-hmm.
He has taken on a Fedaiken war name
mm-hmm.
and a secret name. He has ridden Shai Hulud. Like he's hitting all the check boxes. But to what Chani says in the movie, you would be Fremen in name only.
Yeah.
You know, I think to some of these people, it's, you know, you're not born into it, so you're not inherently Fremen. And you never will be Fremen no matter what you do. So I think there's a bit of a cultural divide there. but Stilgar sees all of the, you know, cultural touchstones and the religious touchstones that Paul's hitting, and he's like, yeah, I mean, you might as well be.
Yeah, I think it's a complex question. Yeah. I say this as someone who has immigrated to another country myself.
I think we likened it to like marrying into a religion or something like that, mm-hmm. or converting into a religion later in life.
Yeah, because we know we have a few friends that have converted to various religions and stuff, and like,
he's like, yeah, while you would consider yourself of that religion, like if that religion is tied to any kind of ethnicity, then you wouldn't be considered the ethnic part of that religion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Stilgar would say yes to that. And Chani would say no.
Or that's maybe fair.
Movie Chani would say no for
that's
sure.
Fair.
Yeah. Book Chani, different story.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I have to say, when, you know, I was talking about in the last episode about how I thought they did Chani and Irulan better in the movie versus the books in terms of fleshing them out more. My biggest complaint about Doom Part 1 was how Jessica was handled. And now that I'm reading Jessica side by side with the movie, I'm actually like, you know what? I think Part 2 is better than Jessica in the books at this point. I think she... I think her relationship with Paul, it's still on edge, but it feels... less, I don't know, it gets annoying to me how kind of almost mean he is thinking about his mom a lot at certain points, and also how she seems so uncertain. And here you can see certain moments where the uncertainty comes through. I think in the next minute we'll get to talk about that. But overall, she projects more confidence, which is what I was missing from Doom Part 1.
1,000,000% agree. I think we said this, like, they did her dirty in the first movie because she was just like this stressed out mother the entire time.
I mean, that was our running joke from Part 1, was that she was Stressica. and
yeah,
our Lady of Perpetual Anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. it's not, she is a much more, you know, fleshed out character, or at least like the attitudes and the dialogue that we're getting out of her now much closely line up to the confident person that Jessica in the books is.
And they're giving Rebecca Ferguson more to do. I felt like she was a little wasted in the first.
And it's only going to get better. Like, Rebecca Ferguson's acting only gets better from here on out too. Mm-hmm. Like, spoilers for the end, but like the look that Jessica gives Guy's Helen Moheim at the end is so fucking good. So good. Yeah. So
also, I just love the costume design by Jacqueline West. The face tattoos, it's such a cool concept. Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny, like, she didn't have to tat up her whole face, but, you know, she's outsider lady. She needs to bring the vibes extra hard. Like, the litany of fear really across my face. Yeah.
I'm really glad, too, that they kept that consistent between Part 1 and Part 2, because we only had a very brief glimpse of Jessica with, you know, covered in face tattoos and everything in Part 1, but, like, it is still, you know, so consistent, so one-to-one. And yeah, the ever complex Reverend Mother garb only gets more and more intense from here on out. So big fan of that.
We're all, like, all three of us here in this virtual room, we are Rebecca Ferguson stans. I think I was first introduced to her in Silo.
Okay.
Because I've not seen the Mission Impossible movies that she was in.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't seen them, which is, I'm working on it. I'm going through them. But I think, I think Silo was the first thing that I saw her in.
That's the best of her, though. I think that's honestly, it is, though.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, she's wonderful.
This is second best, like, for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
For her.
But yeah, just a fantastic actress.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to talking about the later minutes with her. Because there's a lot. there is a lot to talk about.
So the last little bit of this minute, we have half of a sentence to get through left here. And so after Paul says, what you did, what your people did to this world is heartbreaking. One thing that I didn't mention for Paul's thing, this really felt like Chani's words coming through Paul. Mm. We got a lot of Alia's words coming through Jessica a second ago. And now we're getting Chani's words coming through Paul.
Yep.
Chani and Alia fight.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see that dynamic.
She's going
to
fight movie. The baby. Fight. Yeah.
And so Jessica punches back at this point, and she goes, "We gave them something too."
We've been really good about having minutes end at the end of sentences. Maybe not the end of conversations, but the end of sentences lately. And then...
What could it be? We gave them something to put on their burgers.
Find out on tomorrow's episode of the Doom Minute Podcast. Yeah.
We gave them something to...
forward to.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Like I said yesterday, I don't have much to talk about on the books here. This is not a book heavy week at all. We got a lot to talk about just with the, like interpersonal interactions and we will, but nothing directly to pull from and to compare to in the books.
Yep. I've got plenty for Martin Soul for tomorrow. But we will, we'll get to that when we get to it.
Alicia, anything else on your notes for this one?
No, I just want to say that actually David's complaints about the diction critique is starting to leak into my own thoughts on this rewatch. David, you're infecting my enjoyment of this movie with your diction critique. It's not that they, like, I think that they need to speak with an RP British accent or something. It's that I want consistency within each group.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the actors, though. I mean, that's just bringing themselves to the role, I guess. I don't know. We try to ignore it when we can, but there's parts where we can't.
Yeah.
All right, you want to take us out, John?
Yeah, of course. As always, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. The Lorehounds, we will have all of y'all's socials and everything down in the podcast description and details. And Alicia, yesterday you talked about how y'all are diving in on the Woolship Dust side of things into the book. Those episodes should be coming out around the same time that these will be, I think.
Okay.
if we have our schedules right. So we'll definitely make sure to link to everything Lorehounds and everything that you're doing as well.
All right.
We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute, and we'll see you then.
See ya.